Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Happening now, breaking news, killer's timeline. Dayton police released dramatic new surveillance video to go with a minute-by-minute timeline of the attack that left 9 people dead. We see the killer get his gun, start the attack, and moments later, the police response. But did the killer act alone? Showdown with China. Protesters flood Hong Kong's international airport, then fight with riot police. President Trump gets involved, tweeting China is massing troops at Hong Kong's border. Did he reveal secret U.S. intelligence? Trump backs down. The president is putting off tariffs on popular Chinese imports like smartphones, laptops, and toys. That will keep prices down for the holiday shopping season. But will his trade war heat up after the holidays? And Russia's nuclear secrets. A deadly explosion and suspected release of radiation may have blown the cover of some of Vladimir Putin's top secrets. Are the Russians trying to hide a nuclear explosion because it came in a secrets city devoted to building new weapons? I'm Wolf Blitzer. You're in the Situation Room.
This is CNN Breaking News.
We're following multiple breaking stories, including dramatic new details in the Dayton mass shooting investigation. During a news conference that ended just a little while ago, police revealed new surveillance video of the gunman before and during the attack. They also released a detailed timeline of what happened. We're also following the very tense situation in Hong Kong, where protesters fought with riot police after forcing the international airport to shut down. President Trump is calling for calm and claims China is moving troops to the border with Hong Kong. That came shortly after the president blinked in his ongoing trade war with China. His administration put off tariffs on popular imported tech goods like smartphones and laptops, as well as toys. The tariffs were set to start September 1st. They've been delayed now until mid-December. I'll get reaction to all today's news from Congressman Andre Carson of the Intelligence Committee. And our correspondents and analysts will have full coverage of the day's top stories. Let's begin with CNN's Gary Tuchman. Gary, you're in Dayton. Police tonight went into extraordinary detail about the shooter's movements that night. What have you learned?
Well, that's right, Wolf. The surveillance video is dramatic. It's sickening. It's upsetting, and it tells you quite a bit. What we know right now, this wasn't any spur-of-the-moment killing. This was well planned out. And what we see in the video is the actual time when this gunman fires the shots. It was 1:05 a.m. last Sunday morning. He started firing the shots. We see it all. 32 seconds later, he is shot dead by brave policemen. There was lots more that happened before that. We see about 2 hours worth of video, and the police officers who were here today in Dayton City Hall told us more about that.
He goes into Ned Pepper's. He's there for about 30 minutes.
The shooter actually comes out of Ned Pepper's and walks right in front of that police cruiser. He was aware of where they were. Now he's traveling eastbound, and you'll see that he has the backpack, and he's in long sleeves, and the backpack is weighted down. It's not empty. And there he goes. And we know that he's been firing, then pause for a second, because just past this umbrella is the taco stand on Fifth Street. That's where our first three fatalities occur. One of them is Sister. So they've obviously just heard the gunfire. And you'll see on the right-hand side, the path of Officer Rolfus approximate. So he's engaging right now. That was the shooter that just went by. So you're gonna see the shooter continue to run right here, and it's gonna end right here.
He was with his sister and the companion in the bar when they first got to the very busy street here at the Entertainment District of Dayton, Ohio, at 11:05 p.m. But when he carried out these killings, he was not with them. Police say they do not know, and they may never know, if he intentionally killed his sister and the companion. A very important thing we want to tell you, Wolf, at this point, is that there is no indication whatsoever that he was with an accomplice. And all these snippets of video, when he's going to change his clothes, when he gets his rifle, when he starts shooting, he is all by himself. There is no accomplice there.
Did police, Gary, reveal anything more about a possible motive?
I asked that question very specifically, and they say not only do they not know the motive, they may never know a motive. However, they do know his mindset. They say that they learned a lot from what they saw on his computer, what they saw in his writings. They say he was obsessed with violence and that he expressed a desire to carry out a mass killing. So that's his mindset. They know that, but they may never know the exact motivation of why he did, what he did, where he did.
Gary Tuchman in Dayton for us. Thanks for that update. We're also following a very tense situation in Hong Kong where riot police clashed with protesters after they shut down the international airport. CNN's Ivan Watson is joining us from Hong Kong right now. It's already Wednesday morning. So what's the latest? What's the situation now, Ivan?
Wolf, this is so surreal. It's 5 a.m. here. Passengers and airport workers are filing in. Almost as if the incredible scenes that we saw 5 or 6 hours ago hadn't happened, when there were thousands of demonstrators here and there were eruptions of violence here, the kind of violence that we've seen playing out in the streets of this city increasingly for 2 months, now erupting here in this important international transit hub. Overnight, confrontations in Hong Kong turning violent, as thousands of pro-democracy protesters flooded the country's busy international airport, paralyzing it for a second day. As the growing tension played out on live television, police moved in carrying shields and wearing body armor, pushing the crowd back. At times, it was hard to tell who sided with whom. We were there as this group of protesters turned on a man they suspected of being a Chinese agent. Some tried to protect him as others kicked him. Medics eventually succeeded in taking the injured man away. He's since been identified as a reporter for the Chinese state news outlet Global Times. Other protesters blocked passengers from reaching their planes.
I don't have his medical, I don't have bottle, I don't have here. After today, I'm seen killing.
You understand?
Sir, finish, go home.
Forcing the cancellation of hundreds of flights and stranding thousands of passengers.
We cannot avoid this. It's somehow unavoidable because we fight for our final goal. That is our freedom.
Hong Kong's leader, who's effectively appointed by the Chinese government, admits she's losing control.
Hong Kong society is not safe or stable. The rioters have pushed Hong Kong to the brink of no return.
The protests here began peacefully 2 months ago, as millions of pro-democracy demonstrators took to the streets to oppose a proposed extradition law with mainland China. But some hardliners who don't want this former British colony to be controlled by communist China have grown increasingly violent, clashing week after week with police, at times leading to showdowns with tear gas and nightsticks. The protesters were spoiling for a fight, and now they've got one. Tonight, the central government in mainland China is sending increasingly ominous warnings, showing off security forces close to Hong Kong. What's not clear is if China will use that force to quash the dissent, or if protesters, who seem motivated for a fight for their freedom, will back down. It's the worst political crisis the city's seen in decades. Wolf, just yards from where I'm standing, about 6 hours ago, I saw this crowd of protesters kicking this Chinese journalist who was on the ground, beating him until he was taken away. And in the last couple of hours, this is, again, so surreal. Airport workers have covered over the graffiti that the protesters left. They've cleaned up the leaflets that were here. And it looks like this airport is starting to function again, and as if none of this actually happened. The fact is, though, is that Hong Kong's reputation is being hurt badly. And there is a collective feeling that the wheels are starting to come off a city that was known as an island of stability and efficiency and safety here in Asia.
Yeah, it Wolf. Certainly was. I've been there. It's amazing Ivan Watson on the scene for us. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, President Trump has been talking and tweeting about the situation in Hong Kong. Let's go to our chief White House correspondent, Jim Acosta. He's outside the president's resort in New Jersey for us. So what's the latest? Tell us more, Jim.
Yeah, well, President Trump is weighing in on the unfolding situation in China, at one point tweeting that U.S. intelligence has information that the Chinese are moving troops toward Hong Kong. The president has also temporarily backed down in his trade war with China, delaying a new round of tariffs on Chinese products coming into the U.S.
Revealing what may be sensitive national security information in a tweet, President Trump inserted himself into the growing crisis in Hong Kong. As the protests there were becoming more violent, the president hinted China may be about to take action, tweeting, "Our intelligence has informed us that the Chinese government is moving troops to the border with Hong Kong. Everyone should be calm and safe." Democratic Senator Chris Murphy criticized the president's tweet, saying, "This is not foreign policy." The president hardly sounded fazed by it all.
We'll see what happens, but I'm sure it'll work out. I hope it works out for everybody, including China, by the way.
The president is backing off his trade war with China, delaying a new round of tariffs on Chinese products until December. The president said his administration is doing that to spare shoppers during the holidays, even though he's repeatedly said the tariffs aren't hurting consumers.
Are we doing this for Christmas season, just in case some of the tariffs would have an impact on U.S. customers?
On the domestic front, the president continued to express confidence that new gun control legislation could make its way through Congress, despite stout GOP opposition.
Look, it's very simple. There's nobody more pro-Second Amendment than Donald Trump. But I don't want guns in the hands of a lunatic or a maniac. And I think if we do proper background checks, we can prevent that.
The president also defended top immigration official Ken Cuccinelli, who told National Public Radio that the poem on the Statue of Liberty should be changed to reflect new administration policy to punish legal immigrants who receive government assistance.
Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own 2 feet.
I don't think it's fair to have the American taxpayer paying for people to come into the United States.
Cuccinelli was echoing top White House official Stephen Miller, who downplayed the importance of the poem 2 years ago.
The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty.
The president also resumed his war of words with former communications director Anthony Scaramucci.
He wanted to come back into the administration for the last 5 months, begging me to come back in. I said, "Anthony, I can't take you in. I'm sorry." He called so much. He's a nervous, neurotic wreck.
Scaramucci fired back, tweeting, "President Trump isn't a fan of anyone willing to tell him the truth. The emperor has no clothes." The president then turned an official White House speech into what sounded like a campaign rally.
"In 2020, we're running, so you better get out there and make sure we win."
As he complained that just being president has cost him billions, a claim that came with zero supporting evidence.
"You know, it's probably going to cost me, including upside, downside, lawyers. It's probably costing me from $3 to $5 billion for the privilege."
Now, for the moment, the White House is offering at least the appearance of taking the gun issue more seriously. A White House official said daughter and advisor Ivanka Trump is sounding out lawmakers on the phone up on Capitol Hill. It is unclear how much pull the first daughter has up on Capitol Hill, as Democrats and Republicans are miles apart on the gun issue. Wolf.
You certainly are. All right, Jim Acosta, thanks very much. Joining us now, Democratic Representative Andre Carson of Indiana. He's a member of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. And I quickly want to get to the aftermath of the shootings in El Paso and Dayton. In the aftermath, you said this, and let me read to you what you said. He said, "This president is incapable of bringing about solutions because he is part of the problem." But today, President Trump said he thinks Mitch McConnell and a lot of Republicans, in his words, want to do background checks. So how do you interpret those remarks?
It is about background checks, but it's beyond background checks. I think President Trump is fanning the flames of xenophobia, an anti-immigrant sentiment. Mitch McConnell is sitting on this. He needs to call an emergency session to get this thing done. The House has already done the work. It's time for Mitch McConnell to not only stand up to the president, but to stand up and be a leader to get those two pieces of legislation that have already been passed by the House through the Senate.
Why do you think he won't even allow those two bills to come up for a vote?
Well, it seems to be, in one sense, Wolf, a lack of leadership. On the other end, I think he's playing to his base. He's on the ballot next year. He represents a very conservative base. You have some good progressives. You have some good moderates in Kentucky. But for the most part, I think it's a political calculation that hopefully will not yield results positively for him.
Your colleagues on the Judiciary Committee, they're coming back early from recess to consider other gun control legislation. What specifically do you want them to do?
Well, we're still looking at proposals and talking about proposals as a caucus right now. So we're getting insights from Chairman Nadler, and we're also receiving inputs from folks like myself and Chairman Benny Thompson, Homeland Security, and other people about what that looks like. But one thing is clear. The American people are fatigued. The recent shooting in Ohio and El Paso, unfortunate shootings, were just two of over 250 mass shootings this year. And so we have a real problem with assault rifles. As a former police officer, I can say I don't think that the average citizen should have access to those high-capacity magazines or assault rifles.
We'll see what happens, if anything. In the meantime, Congressman, you serve on the Intelligence Committee. Let me get your reaction to this tweet from the president earlier today. He wrote this. He said, "Our intelligence has informed us that the Chinese government is moving troops to the border with Hong Kong. Everyone should be calm and safe." First of all, have you been briefed on the situation in Hong Kong?
Yeah, I think that the administration has a responsibility to urge the Chinese government to uphold the rule, the one country, two systems compromise that has been enacted. I think that the chief executive officer, Carrie Lam, should really listen to the protesters' concerns about removing this extradition bill and also making sure that law enforcement and the military aren't excessive and they're allowing the protesters to protest peacefully. But the protesters have a responsibility too, Wolf, in making sure they're not beating people up, especially members of the journalist community.
We've seen Chinese media release videos of their military assets near the border with Hong Kong. If China were to try to put down these protests by major force, what would the appropriate American response be?
Well, I think it's important for America to weigh in. Hong Kong is an economic center, one of the largest, arguably the largest, some would say, in the world, next to New York. But it's also the center of cultural life in that region. And so the United States has a responsibility to weigh in on this matter before it worsens. It's already hurting the economy there. It's already causing a great deal of angst and anxiety. And I think the people want it and deserve it. And, you know, the protesters are tired, and so is the military.
On a different subject, Congressman, while I have you, you heard Ken Cuccinelli, the acting director of Citizenship and Immigration Services, offer this update to the words on the Statue of Liberty. He suggested, give me you're tired and you're poor. And then he added these words, who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge. What's your reaction to that?
You know, I think right now, I think what is happening, the raids that we just saw in Mississippi, and Chairman Thompson had a powerful statement on that. I think it's disappointing to watch little girls cry, having watched her parents get taken away and deported, having children fear not being able to start school, all for the sake of political expediency and framing an issue to make sure a base turns out in 2020, to me, is un-American and it's deeply disappointing.
Congressman Andre Carson, thanks as usual for joining us.
What an honor. Thank you, Wolf.
Up next, President Trump says China is moving troops to the border of Hong Kong. Will there be a violent crackdown after weeks of protests? Plus, the deepening mystery caused by an explosion and suspected radiation release during what the U.S. suspects was the test of a nuclear-powered missile. President Trump is sounding an optimistic note on potential background check legislation for gun purchases, but there's little evidence that Senate Republicans are ready to make moves on a gun control bill already passed by Democrats in the House. Our political experts are here to discuss. David Chalian, President, insists Republicans support his plan for some sort of background checks. There doesn't seem to be any serious movement in the Senate on that. The House has already passed such legislation.
Yeah, and it's not at all clear that the president is saying he wants that House bill to pass the Senate. He keeps talking about, quote unquote, meaningful background checks. But if you're looking for movement from Republicans, it's going to be tough to find right now. A, Congress is not in. B, I don't think Donald Trump is speaking for most Republicans here. I think he may be speaking for some Republicans. We know he had a conversation with Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, who co-authored that bill back in 2013 with Joe Manchin on dealing with background checks. But I don't see some groundswell of Republican senators. In fact, I think more that we've heard from have been Barrasso, others that have sort of said, whoa, slow your roll a little bit.
So what are you hearing, April? I know you're doing some reporting on this as well.
Yeah, basically, Wolf, it's talk. It's a lot of talk. If they wanted to create some kind of action around this, it would happen. I think back to Parkland, how America was incensed, how those students of that school pulled the world together to say, look, we're not going to take it anymore. And then the president had a town hall meeting. Remember that? And the president was so gripped by emotion that he talked about pushing forward with something. And then the NRA said, whoa, this president and Republicans in the Senate are controlled, and even Republicans in the House are controlled by the NRA. If the president were to go to Dayton, Ohio, and to other places where these shootings are happening and meet with the people, like John Legend did the other night. He met with one of the children of one of the victims, 7 years old. He said he was crying, and he gave that performance. These murders, this domestic terrorism is really gripping this nation. And if the president really wanted to do something, or if Republicans in the Senate and the House wanted to do something, they would do it.
You were learning, Jeffrey, that the president's senior advisor, Ivanka Trump, is talking with lawmakers right now about potential gun legislation. A White House official says the president's daughter, quote, has trusted relationships on both sides of the aisle. Do you believe she's qualified to broker these kinds of sensitive issues?
You know, Wolf, there's a reason why most companies have rules against nepotism, because people who are hired on merit are usually better at their jobs than people who are hired because they're related to the boss. You know, as far as I can tell, Ivanka Trump has led an accomplishment-free existence at the White House. And this mythology that followed Ivanka Trump and her husband from New York, that they're really the moderates, they're really not racist, they really believe in gay rights. All of that has proven to be untrue. And they have not, Jared Kushner does have one success with the criminal justice reform bill, which was certainly a real thing. But this is complete spin. And as far as I can tell, it means nothing. And this gun control bill doesn't even exist. And if it existed, it would be going nowhere.
Well, let me get Arlette away. You just came back to Washington from the Iowa State Fair. How are the 2020 Democratic presidential candidates dealing with this, hoping to keep gun control on the radar?
Well, the Democratic candidates really emerged from this weekend in Iowa united in the fact that something needs to get done on guns, whether it's universal background checks or banning the assault weapons ban. But now the tricky part is actually keeping this conversation going, especially as Congress is out of session. You had Joe Biden write an op-ed calling for the ban on assault weapons. Bernie Sanders today in a speech even hinted maybe he could go to Kentucky to try to get constituents to urge Mitch McConnell to act on a number of issues. But with Congress out of session and a quieter time on the campaign trail, it's going to be a little bit difficult for these candidates to keep this on the agenda.
It's going to be very
It's not just that the campaign trail, that Congress is out of session. As April said, every time there has been one of these shootings, whether it's Las Vegas or Parkland or going back to Sandy Hook under President Obama, there's a big call for action immediately, and then things float away. Yeah. There is no reason to believe that this is different from that, unfortunately.
I think you're absolutely right. All right, everybody stick around. There's a lot more we're going to discuss right after this. Let's get back to our analysts and our correspondents. Jeffrey Toobin, the acting director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Ken Cuccinelli, offered a new version of the iconic poem that appears on the base of the Statue of Liberty. Listen to this exchange he had with NPR earlier today.
Would you also agree that Emma Lazarus's words etched on the Statue of Liberty, "Give me your tired, your poor," are also part of the American ethos?
They certainly are. Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge.
What's your response to those words he added?
It's hard to define un-American, but that statement was un-American. And I say this as people, as the descendants of 100 years ago, people who came to this country looking for opportunity and found it. That's why people have come here. You know, they don't want to be public charges, but they come here and they work hard. And a lot of them work in terrible jobs for low pay, and sometimes they need food stamps to eat, you know, to feed their families. That's who that's who's going to be penalized. Not the people who hire the illegal immigrants, who are, you know, they always get away under the Trump administration. But the people who are working hard and trying to support their families, they're the ones who are punished by this. And it is just a disgrace that that is the prevailing ethos of our administration.
Is the administration, April, standing by Ken Cuccinelli's remarks?
Oh, this president is embracing the new talking points by Ken Cuccinelli. Wolf, I talked to the head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, Joaquin Castro, and he said, look, at one point this was about illegals. Now it's about legals. This is about the browning of America. They can parse words, say whatever they want. This is about stopping the browning of America. But also, if we're looking at this, this new talking point that they're using, when you talk about the charge that they have on this nation, who is the poorest in America? What area is the poorest in America? It's Appalachia. Who is Appalachia? White America.
What do you think, David?
Well, I think there is no doubt that Cuccinelli's version is a totally perverse version of what is actually intended in what is on the Statue of Liberty. And I think that there is little doubt. This is not new for this administration. Putting the target on legal immigration, not just illegal immigration, on legal immigration has been something that President Trump made very clear early on was going to be a mission of his, as well as trying to deal with illegal immigration.
What are you hearing, Arlette, from the out there on the campaign trail?
Well, we're still waiting to hear like what further reaction we will be getting. I believe that there might have been a statement released a short while ago. But people on the campaign trail have often been critical of the White House and President Trump's approach to immigration. So this surprisingly probably will not sit well with those Democratic candidates.
Let me get to some of the political nuggets, David Chalian, that are unfolding right now. Tom Steyer, the billionaire, he's now met at least one of the thresholds to participate in the next Democratic presidential debate in Houston. Fellow candidate Steve Bullock, though, is accusing the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, of letting wealthy candidates buy their way onto the debate stage. Does he make a fair point?
Well, I think voters will have to assess that. His argument, there is no doubt that the way the DNC set up these rules, especially for this third debate, you have to meet two qualifying thresholds. You have to have 2% or more in four polls, and you must have 130,000 donors across 20 states. And one way that Tom Steyer and others are trying to find those small dollar donors is by spending millions of dollars on Facebook ads saying, hey, just give me $1. And so now Tom Steyer's crossed that fundraising threshold, and he's only one poll away from meeting that 2% threshold. Now, he's been buying television ads. He's been in people's living rooms for months. That's another way he's spending his money to try and make it across the line and get on the debate stage, and he's likely to make it.
You know, Jeffrey Toobin, I just want to get your thoughts on Bernie Sanders. He seems a little bit today to be scaling back his attack on the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon. He's now scaling that back a bit. But what do you make of the criticism he's leveling at what he calls the corporate news media?
Well, his attack on the Washington Post in particular is idiotic. I mean, the work that they have done under Jeff Bezos, the golden age of the Washington Post that we are now in under Jeff Bezos, has nothing to do with Amazon. And they have done superb work, and it's an insult to our friends and colleagues over at the Washington Post. I think it's indicative of the fact that the Bernie Sanders campaign isn't going so well. You know, he's way down in the polls compared to where he was in 2016, and he is engaging in the invenerable tactic of shooting the messenger, which is the news media. it's not the news media's fault that he's down in the polls, is that he's not competing one-on-one with Hillary Clinton anymore. But that is certainly not the fault of The Washington Post or Jeff Bezos.
You know, I know a lot of people, Arlette. Hold on one second. Arlette, I want you to weigh in because you cover the political campaigns for us. I know a lot of people at The Washington Post, and all of them have said to me repeatedly they have felt no pressure from Jeff Bezos at all. They let The Washington Post do their job.
That's right. And The Washington Post came out very forcefully and said that this was kind of a conspiracy theory of Bernie Sanders. But it's also not entirely new for Bernie to be criticizing the media. You remember going back to 2016, they felt that they had received unfair coverage. In fact, one of his senior campaign advisors was calling that just yesterday the Bernie blackout, and then today saying that it's the Bernie write-off. So there is a sentiment among his campaign that they're not exactly getting the coverage that they believe is fair, but the coverage that they don't like.
April, very quickly.
Yeah, you know, Bernie Sanders has to really worry about looking like Donald Trump going after the press, particularly in this moment in time. This is not like when he ran against Hillary Clinton. This is a moment where freedom of the press is being challenged, and this president has showed his disdain against the press. So Bernie Sanders may want to start pulling that back a bit.
Everybody stand by. There's more news we're following, including a major shakeup at the jail where the wealthy financier Jeffrey Epstein died from an apparent suicide. The overall comes as the FBI probes the circumstances surrounding Epstein's death and combs his private Caribbean island for clues about his alleged sex trafficking ring. There's breaking news as questions continue about the circumstances that led to Jeffrey Epstein's apparent suicide in jail. Today, the Justice Department announced the jail's warden has been temporarily reassigned. At the same time, prosecutors are shifting focus to whether any of Epstein's associates were involved in sex trafficking. Let's bring in CNN's Bryn Gingras. Bryn, you're there on the scene. What's the latest in New York?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been told this investigation is far from over, but now we have more proof. You can see here in the video that we're about to show you that FBI agents swarmed Epstein's home on Little St. James, which is a private island in the U.S. Virgin Islands. And authorities, along with federal prosecutors, are investigating, just as you said, Epstein's inner circle, who may have known and helped him commit years of alleged sexual abuse. Now, of course, again, this is in the wake of Epstein's apparent suicide while in federal custody here in Manhattan. Now, as part of charges filed against Epstein last month, prosecutors mentioned three employees as possible co-conspirators, but didn't name or charge anyone. Well, Epstein's accusers are going after them. A lawyer representing some accusers asked a judge to reverse a non-prosecution agreement that protected four alleged co-conspirators as part of a deal made with Epstein more than a decade ago. Now, this would allow them to possibly face criminal charges, and the request has the support of Republican Senator Ben Sasse, who says the deal should be ripped up. In a statement, he said this in part, "This crooked deal cannot stand, shielding Epstein's fellow rapists and exploiters." And this, as the investigation into what went wrong inside Manhattan's MCC, where Epstein was held, is picking up steam. A source is telling CNN that two guards ordered to keep an eye on the accused sex trafficker were both working overtime shifts, and one of the guards wasn't even part of the regular detention workforce, instead filling in as a guard. The two members are now on leave pending an investigation, and the MCC warden was temporarily reassigned and replaced by an acting warden from another prison nearby in Otisville, New York.
Bryn Gingras with the latest on that front. Thanks, Bryn. Coming up, will a deadly explosion and possible release of radiation reveal some of Vladimir Putin's most valuable military secrets? Tonight, a deadly accident apparently involving a nuclear-powered missile may have revealed new information about top-secret Russian military facilities. Brian Todd has been investigating. Brian, what are you learning?
Well, tonight we have new information on that explosion and the secret nuclear network in Russia that it exposed. Entire cities fenced off, inaccessible, completely classified. There are at least 10 of those cities, and we're told they form the heart of Vladimir Putin's nuclear weapons program.
Tonight, U.S. officials fear what Vladimir Putin has yet to acknowledge, that a deadly explosion late last week in Russia was caused by a nuclear-powered missile. Today, Russian military officials called for the evacuation of the village of Nyonoksa, about 30 miles west of the coastal port area where Thursday's explosion occurred. They said it was because of military drills. But hours later, they called off the evacuation, even though independent groups have verified that some radioactive particles have very likely gotten into the air.
I think, you know, a lot of other countries would have probably already evacuated the surrounding areas, but I think the Kremlin's a bit in damage control at this point.
Damage control, experts say, because they believe the explosion may have tipped off the U.S. and others to information that Putin may never have wanted to become public. The five elite nuclear specialists killed in the accident were from Sarov, one of Russia's secret cities. During the Cold War, it was known as Arzama 16. The Russians have at least 10 secret cities like it, experts say, and they're the rough equivalent of Los Alamos, New Mexico, the birthplace of the first American nuclear bombs.
The 10 facilities are going to be focused on the width and breadth of the Russian nuclear arsenal. So some are going to have to do with developing the delivery systems, missiles or, you know, gravity bombs. Some are going to be more focused on the actual weapons themselves and, you know, processing the plutonium.
Analysts say these secret Russian cities are even more closed off than those notoriously secretive American facilities like Los Alamos or Area 51, the classified aircraft and weapons compound in Nevada.
Look, if you're a foreigner, you can't get anywhere near these cities. Sometimes they will grant foreigners access if you give up your passport, your phone, your camera. They'll let you in for a little bit, but that is very rare. Even for Russians, you have to go through a checkpoint to get in. There's sometimes electric fences around these cities.
Experts say many of these cities are decrepit, decaying, and have experienced deadly accidents with nuclear material and even anthrax. But they're still important to Vladimir Putin, who's developing an ambitious new weapons program, which includes the missile that U.S. officials say just exploded, a cruise missile with essentially a nuclear reactor on board, and which could have unlimited range. Experts say the deadly explosion is likely not on the scale of Chernobyl, the 1986 nuclear plant explosion which killed dozens initially and may have contaminated thousands more. Like this explosion, the Soviet Union at first refused to acknowledge the nuclear accident until the West detected high radiation levels over Europe.
What the danger really is here is that the Russians continue to pursue these kinds of potentially dangerous and risky systems.
Analysts say despite this deadly accident, we should not expect Vladimir Putin to cut back his ambitious new weapons program. They say the Russian president is simply too eager to develop a sophisticated, high-powered missile. Wolf?
Brian Todd reporting, thank you. Coming up, a breaking news out of Ohio, where officials are now offering extraordinary new details about a mass shooter.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.